Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. This is your host with the most, Nikki Carulla. We are going to jump into another quarantine edition of Wake Up, Hollywood. We have tonight singer-songwriter Joanna Duff. Say hello, Joanna. How are you?
Hello, Joanna. How are you?
Very good.
I have a horrible sense of humor.
That's all right. We're going to get along great. That's perfect. So where are you from, Joanna?
Oh, that's a odd question. I was born in Monterey, the daughter of a Marine, proud daughter of a United States Marine.
Awesome.
He was at the Naval Postgraduate School up there when I was born, and then quickly got moved over to Quantico, Virginia.
Oh, wow.
Mainly grew up there and went to school at Georgia and now live in LA. So, like,
you've been all over.
Only states that end in IA. So,
you've got to keep it consistent then.
That's right. No more. Only states that end in IA.
Like, that's it. And yeah. Of your favorites, do you love LA the most?
Yeah, 100%. LA, I'd say my two favorite cities in the world are LA and London.
Good choices.
They don't have anything in climate-wise in common, but yeah, I just love the energy of both for different reasons. But LA is home, feels like home. So I'm glad to be back on the West Coast.
That's awesome. So when did you get bit by the bug of music, and what was the moment of Zen that made you know that you fell in love with music or that you wanted to become a musician?
Probably Christmas, in like one of the Christmases in the 80s. I don't remember exactly what year, but I got a Muppet keyboard.
Awesome. I approve.
Right. And it taught you how to play such hits as Moving Right Along and, you know.
Awesome.
And Rainbow Connection. So that was really what fostered my interest, to be fair. I had piano lessons as a kid, and I also have to credit the Beatles for getting me really just wanting to play guitar, and I wanted to learn everything the Beatles, and then I looked at the chord progressions. I'm like, maybe just like Here Comes the Sun. So yeah, but I think just creating and sitting. I was really lucky to have a piano in my home as a kid. And just sit, I would sit on the piano and I would just put together like chord progressions and write songs like about my friends being friends, you know.
How old were you when that was all happening?
I don't know, like 8 or 9, you know. I
was wow.
Writing like stupid songs about being friends, you know. I mean, great songs about being friends, but like, you know friendship's the best. It's the great, you know? And I would write a lot of poetry. I'd always draw, and I was always just like a creative mind. So it was just another outlet for me to just get my hands in and get involved in. So, and I was really
love that.
Parents that wanted me to grow up and be in like, you know, real super smart tech or doctor or something, but still fostered. You're like, you're going to go to college, but here's a guitar. So.
And was there, like you said, the Beatles were a major influence. Was there another artist that really kind of put you in the right frame of mind to pursue it?
Well, I mean, I probably like one of my, this is going to sound weird, but Peggy Lee from like a vocalist standpoint was a huge influence. And I would sing all of her songs just around the house all the time. And like the Beach Boys, my parents had a CD player, and they had like a Beatles, they had They have one of those giant CD players that you had back in the day. Like, people are going to be listening to this morning. What do you mean?
What's a CD?
Playing Spotify, like, and listening, you know, watching YouTube. But I had like four CDs I could listen to, and it was Beach Boys, Greatest Hits. There was Hard Day's Night and Peggy Lee, and then Manhattan Transfer.
Oh, wow. That's really pretty eclectic.
Really good. Yeah, really great. And then there was a Christmas CD. So I love Christmas songs too.
That's awesome. That's super crazy. Like
that's what you had. And so I would be in my room, or not in my room, in my living room. And I'd play on this giant, like, you know, sound system, these like four or five CDs over and over again. And I'd, you know, do dance routines and do like stage productions and things, you know. For my dog, you know, and sometimes my mom would watch, but it was just how I was expressing my creative outlet. And so I think just doing things like that, I don't know. And then when I went to school in Athens, Georgia, which is like, as you know, for those of you who don't know, R.E.M. is from Athens, Georgia.
Right.
B-52 is like Widespread Panic. There's a lot of really, really great, it's a really great place to go. And if you have like any sort of like aspirations to be a musician, I think like that's a really good place to be, because people are just going to push you to it. And if you have any, you know, smidgen of talent in you, people are going to want to develop it and foster it. And like, that was the moment when I was like, I could actually write songs and do something with this. That was that moment.
Did you start playing like venues in Atlanta, like Eddie's Attic or anything like that?
Well, I played the first place I played live ever was in Athens. It was a place called DT's Down Under. It was this little hole in the wall. Down Under was like cobwebs to get down there. It was just like this. It was like the Cavern Club, you know? No, it
wasn't. Totally.
It was very like just that. It was a very small venue, but it was really cool. And like all the people there were really cool. And they had open mic night every Tuesday. I remember like the first time I went to play an open mic night there, I was just very nervous. I had my roommates there from, you know, I was still in college, and we played my three songs about my ex-boyfriend, like, "You broke my heart, blah, blah, blah." And it was just like the energy you got, and you're just like, okay, I got to do that again, and kept doing it. But the first place I played in Atlanta was Smith's Old Bar.
So yeah.
Yeah.
That place.
I never actually played Eddie's Attic. Unfortunately, never played there. Would love to go back. You know, once we're out of this, once I feel comfortable.
No, it's crazy. What crazy times, right?
Yeah.
It's like the weirdest time to be an artist, but it's also an invigorating time to be an artist, because while everybody's been staying at home, being quarantined, they're relying on art. They're relying on music, movies to kind of get them through. So you realize the importance of what we do is to create, and to create entertainment for people that give them an escape. So I think there's something about it becoming more immediate, you know, like that.
Sure.
You know, such a great thing to do, to create, but it's definitely a weird thing to see how the industry is just kind of like toppled, you know, upside down a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. I love to write and I love to play at home and like, you know, sit in my room, lock myself in my room. And like, but I am not one of these guitar, you know, these garage band aficionados who love, you know, I want to be out playing. I want to have that energy of the crowd. Like, that's where I get like invigorated for. I love even just going to see artists play, like just seeing some of
me
my
too. The exact same.
You know, yeah. Like I'll go, like, I remember being at a Noel Gallagher concert a year ago and just sitting there and listening to him play a song. And I was like, I have to go home and write like right now. So when I see some of like Grace Potter is another one, every time I see her, I'm like, I need to go home and write right now. Like, she's so inspired.
I actually played Bonnaroo with her maybe about 10 years ago. And I was just blown away by her. And one of the other artists, Adele, was like an unknown artist at the time. She played that same year, and it was, nobody knew who she was. And it was just amazing to see like the dichotomy of artists, just seeing so much live entertainment in that time period. But I mean, yeah, I'm the same way. It's like when I go see music, it inspires me. It's like a kick in the butt. And it's also like very inspiring. It's like both things. And as long as you use it to your advantage, then it's it could be a thing for the pluses, you know?
Yeah. And so, like, I feel it's challenging in quarantine. You're like, not really, I don't know. I'm inspired. I honestly feel I'm like, I should be doing more, you know, I should be going live like with the rest of the world, you know, on Instagram. And I just, it's just not the same for me. I don't know. Right. I have been writing more. I've been playing more. So I've, you know, when we slow down, and I have been trying to like center that, but it's more of an active thing. Whereas before it was more organic, and I felt like I would get inspired in enough time. Now I found myself, I haven't been inspired in a while. Like, how can I get myself inspired now?
I go through waves, you know, like I think when it comes to just, you know, creating, it's not going to be an everyday thing. You know, it's like, right. I feel like when I hear an artist say, I write songs every day, I'm immediately like, okay, like half the songs maybe are good. But I think everything comes in waves. Like I find myself, if I pick up a guitar and I'm not inspired, I know what I'm just going to be kind of like tracing the lines around. Just, you know, so I always like try to find a reason to take input in, like maybe I'm watching a concert online or maybe I'm listening to a record. There's so much music now. So I find myself like wanting to pick it up when I'm inspired. So don't beat yourself up because that's part of the process.
All right, thank you.
It's easy to, but really it's like, I think the best artists are the ones that, you know, it's not about doing it every day. It's about doing it when you're inspired to do so, because then you're present and you're really capturing lightning in a bottle. And that's what we're all trying to do at the end of the day. When I see guys like that are, you know, guys and girls are practicing like 10 hours a day, I'm like, that's not human. It's just not, you're either not living your life and you're not finding balance, or you're just completely missing what's, you know, kind of important, which is like, take time for yourself. This time period is teaching the world. We all need each other. Reflect, right. Take a deep breath. And, you know, health is something we can't overlook. So, I find myself like every time I start to like beat myself up about practicing, it's like, nah, don't do that. Don't do that, Joanna. We need you. All right.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's just also like just taking a time to listen. Right. It's so important right now to listen to other people's perspectives and to. Right. Because that's going to help shape you and make you a better artist in the future anyway. So I think that's another piece where it's like, is it really my time to speak? I don't think so. It's my time to listen.
So I see a guitar back there. When did you start playing guitar?
I was 15, I think. My mom had to drive me still. So I think I was 15 when I begged to get guitar lessons. And had this instructor who was like classically, you know, was classical guitarist. So was, you know, had you playing with like, you know, very, yeah.
Right.
And I was just like, man, this kind of sucks. And he like really liked Soundgarden. So I felt like I was playing like Soundgarden, like, you know, in this weird, like all the time. And I'm just like, what am I doing? And I don't mind. First of all, Soundgarden's awesome, but it was just like, what is this? So I stopped taking lessons with him. And then I was just like, I'm going to learn this on my own. Which
you're like, nope.
Well, I still will play some chords, and people will, if I'm jamming with somebody, they'll be like, what chord are you playing? I'm like, it's D. They're like, that's not how you play D. I'm like, well, that's how I play D.
You know what, that's sometimes how the best artists do it. You know, it's like you have to innovate, and it's like nobody's gonna learn the instrument in the same way, and you'd be surprised. I saw one person, you know, I used to work at Guitar Center way back in the day, and I saw this guy, he was playing guitar like this, like a piano, and it was amazing because he was playing flamenco and doing all this crazy stuff. And I was just like, you know what? So many teachers probably told that guy not to play like that.
Not to do it.
It's just, you know what? You can't do that. I think the best thing is that you take time to just learn the craft, learn chords, piece them together, and write. What do you find yourself writing most about? Is it love? Is it like politics? Is it what's going on in the world right now? Is it family and kind of obstacles that you're going through? What do you find inspiring to write about?
So I'm not able to write when I'm happy. That's the one common theme that I would have in all of my music. The only time I'm ever able to write like a happy song, like like a love song or something, would just be a comedic one. So I wrote this song that I used to have like these like series, like this, like kind of in my set, I'd have like two or three like funny songs. And I always play like, you know, I'd always play the Smelly Cat riff for everybody because that's, oh, you're blonde. Do you have a smelly cat? You have a guitar. So just because it's funny, but, I had this song called Walk of Shame that just, I'd always play it. It's so much better live. We recorded it. I never released it because it's just like, it's better live. You get the energy from the room. And I actually played it at an open mic night, like a comedy open mic night, and at the Laughing Skull in Atlanta once. And that was pretty funny. But that's like the only happy songs I can ever write are just like funny, like poking, you know, it's like I could take myself too seriously type of thing. But the sadness is I think when I am like the classic like tortured artist when I write, like I have to be really sad and really going through something. And the first songs I wrote, my boyfriend in college was like awful. Like he was just an awful person. Like, but like, thank you for him because gosh, like he really drove a lot of music. I was listening to a lot of Dashboard's Confessional. It's
like, oh yeah, they're great.
Yeah, like thank you for inspiring me. So like I just was feel like I just got like in this really, really sad place, and I would just have to like you almost have to be almost careful about it because you're like, if I get too sad, I'm gonna stay in this dark place forever. And I'm not, you know, it's a classic tortured artist. So relationships mostly, and then when my father passed away, he passed away in 2014.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, like that was, I mean, it's probably the hardest thing I've ever had to go through. I mean, it's, you know, it's a weird thing. You know, you know you're going to lose your parents. You know it's inevitable. Like everybody, you know, most people, you know, die after their parents die. And it's still like the worst thing that, you know, it's just like the worst thing. It's like, you know, just... you know what's going to happen, but it still doesn't seem fair. And so like that was a lot to process. And so I wrote a couple of songs about that. And that, you know, even then it was about a relationship. So it's.
Well, it's like you're channeling that pain into something else. And, you know, the funny thing is, you know, a lot of people think that musicians write because of, you know, wanting fame or glory, but really it's like, you sound like me. It's like, I write because it's therapeutic. It's
100%.
It's like how you channel something negative and turn it into something positive just so you can deal with life. And something like the loss that you faced, I'm sure is something that you'll always continue to tap into, to write, no matter if it's a relationship or something, because, you know, I'm sure you feel the same way about your parents that I feel about mine. It's like, they all always represent love and beautiful things, and losing that is something no one ever is going to get over. That, you know, it's just like that's such a deep soulful thing, you know.
No, and I, you know, I think though I would like to grow as an artist a bit and start to kind of channel other people's perspectives. I think that would be interesting, especially again, like I'm saying, like now it's like listening and just making sure that, you know, you're stepping back and hearing other people. So I think like that would be interesting for me. So there was one other song that I wrote after it was when, I hate saying this guy's name, but, this is a Stanford, case, the sexual assault case in Stanford.
Oh yeah, the swimmer
guy. Yeah, not gonna say his name, doesn't deserve it, but yeah, like I read the victim impact statement off of that, and I wrote this song that was kind of a composite about, you know, just rape victims and sexual assault victims, and you know, some of just the personal things that I've gone through, and I just kind of just that all synthesized into one song. So that was kind of the closest.
That's powerful. That's like powerful.
Something. Yeah, as close as I've come to something that's been not just my story. So
that's amazing. And how many records do you have?
I have one record, and I have a single that came out last year, and then I'm starting to figure out what to do next. I think I want to work on another single to put out and do another music video.
That's awesome. And how do you come up with like arrangements, or like what's your process? Do you kind of think about a style that you want to kind of direct the song into, or does it kind of just land in certain areas?
So I typically workshop songs for, I mean, I will write a song and then I come back to it and I come back to it and I come back to it. And there's always this moment where you're like, this is it. Because like the first time I write something, and sometimes it happens like around the first time, like the last song I released, it's called Other Than You. That one, that came together pretty quickly for me. Like that was like one night I had some wine and I just like on it and just, it came really quickly. And then I workshopped it with a couple of musician friends of mine that we got it really, you know, evolved it really well. And that was very quick process. The other song that we'll be playing tonight, California, that is a song that I first wrote when I first moved out to California in mid 2000s and put on a shelf, revisited several times and didn't record it until 2014.
So let's play that. Let's play that right now. Let's play California right now. Renan, yeah. If you're listening, let's play California.
Good segue.
Follows through, and everyone
very nice. Beautiful voice. My goodness. Thank you. I love the song. Great arrangement. Cool guitar parts. Good chords. But I love the lyrics. The lyrics and the vocal. Mm-mm-mm. Very nice. Tell me, what was the inspiration behind that?
Well, it was somebody that I was really close to, that I decided to move to California after I graduated college. And this person was like, I have feelings for you. I'm sorry. Like, I'm about to move cross country and you are telling me this now. You know, we've known each other for years, so it's just a very odd
the timing.
And it just didn't feel like genuine because it was just like, are you saying this? Because, you know, you just, oh my God, I don't know. You know, sometimes guys need a kick in the ass, but like other times I feel like it's just, I don't know. Something I didn't get.
That's for your next song.
No, it's just like, I don't know. So I just remember being kind of upset about it. It kind of threw me. Don't get me wrong. It was never going to be like, I'm going to change my plans for a guy. I was never not go. But I think it just remember sitting when I first moved out here, just sitting in my uncle. I lived with my uncle for like 2 months before, you know, branched out of my own. And I was sitting on his back porch and I was just like, I just have this very vivid memory of like scratching this song down. And then I put it on, like I told you, I put it on a shelf and then I revisited it and like rearranged it and then rearranged it again with my producer, Sean McPherson, who produced that track for that album. And it was just kind of just came together and we really.
It's beautiful. It's so beautiful. Yeah. You know, I always love songs you can drive to. I don't know what it is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's like, that's one of my favorite parts about music is just driving and listening. Mm-hmm. And that's such a driving song. It's a very beautiful driving song. So as soon as I heard it, I was like, oh, this is like road trip.
Put this on your road trip list. Yeah.
Daydream. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I always like feel like when songs allow me to daydream, that's when I know I love the song. And it was just putting me in that place right away. It's really, really beautiful. Super lush. Very cool. And I love the structure of the chorus. And it's just intimate. And it's, you know, conversational too. But it's also thought-provoking with what you're saying. So tell me what made you come back to it to revisit it.
Okay. I have like this massive just binder of music that I have had forever. When I was in college, I actually like printed it out, printed all the lyrics, everything I'd written and put it in like protective sleeves and everything, you know, and then since that beautiful, you know, binder of music, it's like just exploded. And now it's like loose leaf. And like, you know, at one point my dog ate part of it. So like, they're like bitten. It's just like this very eclectic group. And some of the things are like scribbled on the back of like, you know, a plane ticket or something. I don't know. It adds to the charm, of course.
Oh, I love that. I love stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So like I had that and I just had that open one day and this is what I do when I'm practicing. And I've been doing a lot of this in quarantine and I find songs that I've written and I'm like, wait a minute, like why didn't I ever do anything with this? Or you just come back to it. And for whatever reason, this one, I just decided I wanted to rework it. There's others that I play and I'm like, nope, still trash.
Well, you know what? The reason I asked too, it's like I'm working on a new record and I'm almost finished with it.
Oh yeah.
And some of these songs I've been holding on to for 20 years and I just came back to it like, whoa, why haven't I put this on a record? Or I was saving it. Like none of the records that I was doing immediately then it fit for. So I'm always curious, like what makes the songwriter go back to those songs? Because it's like a memory of the memory of what a song is to you changes as you live more life. And you know what I mean? There's something raw about that, you know, those older songs, because you come back to them and it's like that. It's like, whoa, this is something good.
Do you ever, when you like play one of your older songs, and do you ever like find yourself kind of snapping back to that emotion that you were feeling? You know what I mean? You know that feeling? And you're just like, what? I'm like 20 again. What's going on?
Yes. You know? I think that's what I love about songs. It's like they're this living, breathing time capsule.
So, yeah.
And it just makes me just keep wanting. I think that's one of the things that makes me keep going back to songs that, you know, I wrote. Like, you know, when you're first in love with songwriting, you're writing, your feelings are so alive that you're writing in a way that it's just not the same as you get more seasoned. You know, it's like you're searching for that same feeling as you get more seasoned because you're not writing with reckless abandon. So I love when people say that, oh yeah, I went back to the drawing board and looked at, you know, some of the older songs, and then I just stumbled on this and fell in love with it. Because that is the true beauty of a great song. I think the fact that you went back and recorded it, that's the reason why it's so good. It's like, it captures that moment. It captures that vibe.
Yeah. Well, and I think like also it's something, I think we decided we wanted to record it because, sorry, but anytime you name, first of all, I believe that every singer or songwriter has to have a song about California. I think it's just a rite of passage.
True.
Number one. Number two, I think a lot of us can just that feeling about moving across, you know, country or moving.
That's a big move. That's a big move.
Or just I don't know, just following your dreams. I mean, the whole song's about following your dreams and following where you, not even your dreams, really, like where you feel like you're meant to be. And I think a lot of us can relate to that. So I felt like the song was relatable for those reasons, and that, you know, also when you say California, you're like, anyone here from California, you know? Yeah.
There's something sexy about the, even just the state, the name of it, you know? So the other thing too, it's like, I'm from here. I'm from Arcadia, which is like, you know, not far from here. And so whenever I hear somebody packs their bags and heads for their dreams, I'm like, that is so commendable. Like, so many people are afraid to do that. So let me ask you, what was that like for you? Just like, okay, I'm going to leave all the things that are comfortable and go reach for the uncertain and do it with documenting it in song. Like, what was that feeling like? Do you still remember that?
Oh yeah, it was so exciting. Like I think I'm one of those people that kind of searches for that. Like, it will be, in fact, I did it twice. So I moved out here once, then I moved back to Georgia and, you know, grew up as a songwriter, which is, it was all, you know, you look back and you're like, I wish I wouldn't have ever left California, but I'm really glad I did because I was able to grow up in this smaller pond, if you will, but, you know, just have different experiences and then come back and revisit it. And I think, honestly, like, coming out here, it's hard. You know, being in Atlanta, it's so much easier to jam with people. Nobody has, like, really an agenda. It was more, you know, like, oh, yeah, you want to, like, do a gig? Yeah, okay, fine. And here it's like, well, that would be, like, $1,200. And you're just, like, let's just hang out and jam. And I always found that to be very difficult in this town. But what I will say is it pushes you to be better. And it's one of those things where it just keeps you driven and driving. And you meet so many more different people. It's like and you do meet some of those people that are fake and in it for the wrong reasons or competitive or, you know, see you, you know, like there is a lot of that nonsense. Everybody hears about it in LA, but like there's so much talent and so many people to learn from. Like, it is amazing. Some of the open mic nights I've been to in this town where you're just like, where are these from? And you're like, I just got off the bus from Iowa and I, you know, 700 instruments and you're just like, oh my God, this person is just incredible.
That's the one thing, like, you know, being from here, like I went to music school at USC and like I was from here, but I didn't fall in love with the city probably till I was about around 30. And then I realized, holy shit, there's so much art and there's so many artists in this city. And iron sharpens iron. So it's like whenever I go, I think the only city that can probably compete on the same level is New York because it's that same kind of vibe. There's theater, there's visual arts, there's music. But when it comes to music, I mean, there's so many great singer-songwriters. There's so many great session players, producers, studios. And there's so much history, too. So, like, you're in this environment that it's just it fosters you to be a better artist, a more thoughtful artist, a more urgent artist, I think. So I think you're tapping into all the right things about this city that make it wonderful. So,
well, you're right. There's so much history. Like, you walk into the Troubadour, for example, and you're like, this is where folk grew up. Like, this is insane. Like, you know, you're just thinking about some of the people that just sat at that bar and were like watching, you know, like Elton John, you know, his first his kind of debut. And it just, I mean, just like the Mamas and the Papas and like the Beach Boys and all of that, like just the, I don't know. And I'm very much inspired by that.
I can tell because I hear your songs. I'm like, oh my God, this is like Emmy Lou Harris reincarnated. I like it.
She is also the daughter of a Marine.
Oh, wow.
So I like that comparison. Yeah.
She's a fantastic writer, and so are you. So let's play something else. What are you going to play us next?
Okay, so this next song is called We Were the Lucky Ones. And this is, this is probably the most special song to me. I wrote this, and this was the easiest song that I've ever written. I wrote it in lightning speed.
Those are my favorite. Those are my favorite songs to write ever.
So it just kind of hit me one day. I was channeling, it was right after my dad died. It was a couple months after my dad died. And I was just, I don't know, just started thinking about his relationship with my mom. And I just started thinking about it. And they had, they were just each other's person. But he was not like the best at showing affection. He was kind of like, okay, I love you, you know, like kind of very like, and, but he always had like a bear for her and like, you know, their wedding anniversaries, and he would always like, you know, have flowers and he'd always do nice things. And we like planned her retirement party the year he passed away. And he was like so obsessed with like making it perfect for her, and he wanted everything to be special. And there was just so much love, but it was very unconventional. And so I just started thinking about that. And I just started like thinking about like, what would he want to say to my mom right now? And it just like hit me. And it was almost like, I don't like, I'm not like trying to say like my dad was channeling his spirit through me and you know, like, oh, let me, you know, it just felt very easy to like interpret what I thought he was going to be saying. And it just kind of, the words kind of flooded in. And then the chords, I don't remember what writing, I actually don't remember writing the music to this, but I remember it happening really fast. The lyrics came first.
That's not a coincidence. I totally believe in stuff like that. It's,
So I think like that was just interesting. And so I wrote this song and, it's about them, and it's just about, you know, their special relationship. And her, you know, when he died, she was like, really like for all of the like fights that they gotten into, and, you know, like they weren't like yelling at each other all the time, but you know, they fought. And
what relationship is perfect? I mean,
you know what I mean? Like, so like for all of that, like I think when he died, she was just like, she really, it really hit her, and really like she was, I don't know, like really like, oh my God, like he was my person. Like he was, you know, he was kind of an asshole sometimes, but he was my asshole, she would say, you know. I know, we know, Mom, you guys loved each other so much, but they showed it in such a different way. And it's just, I don't know. So it's just my interpretation of their relationship.
All right, here it is.
Didn't matter what the world threw at us.
very nice. So pretty. What I love about that, you know, it's funny that you say you were channeling your father, but it also felt like you were channeling what your mom would want to say to him too. I mean, I got that vibe.
Yeah.
It's really kind of has both, you know, contrasts, you know. Tell me what that was like writing for you. Were you thinking, you know, how you wanted to form the story verse to verse, or?
I wasn't thinking.
That's awesome.
It was so, like, I'm telling you, like, it was so different than any other, like, experience I've had writing a song. It was almost like you kind of blacked out and you're like, and here's a song on paper.
Those are my favorite. I mean, there's a story there. You know, both your songs are giving me chills. Like, that's a good sign. Because you know, I think that's what, you know, in the same way I search for music as a rush. And it's like, you know, when you can find stories in music, I think that's why we write music. That's why we write songs. And what I love is both your songs are like giving moving tributes to different parts of your life. One's objective, like the narratives are different, but it gives you a picture. It gives you a short movie in your mind. And those are the best songs. So job well done, both songs so far. You're hitting it out of the park, girl. I didn't mean to interrupt you. What were you
saying? No, I don't remember. It's fine.
I love that you've got this country Americana style in your songwriting. And I love that you're in California, because everybody always thinks, oh, Nashville, or Memphis, or something like that for that style of music. And you know what? I think some of the best folk country Americana writers happen to come through California. And I love that you're bringing that to, you know, the surface again, because there needs to be a resurgence of that style of music, because those are stories, you know, those are musical stories.
Yeah. And I think it's important also to like experiment with the sounds too. And like, it also, I will say, like, I think when you are inspired by a certain genre or period or era, like it's going to come across in your music. And like, I will say one of my favorite bands is The Clash, and I know that has nothing to do with Americana.
Love it.
But like, just things like the call and response. Actually, another one of my favorite bands is Gaslight Anthem. Brian Fallon is another big fan of The Clash. Those are Gaslight Anthem posters behind me.
That's awesome.
The call and response stuff is something that, I don't know, I play around a lot with, you know, from like, just from, you know, like punk music, and just, I don't know. I feel like pretty inspired by that.
Well, it's raw. There's something raw about it. And it's like very inclusive too. I think the best songs are the ones that you hear back from a crowd, or you know, there's like this interaction that's going on, which is happening anyway when you perform. But when you have a song that kind of really includes people, there's something that just, it's a higher vibration. So I love that. I love that.
Yeah. And I think when you look at, you know, Brian's evolution from Gaslight Anthem into like The Horrible Crows and into Soul Career, he kind of follows, I feel like you kind of like, oh, now you're kind of more of this folky Americana kind of vibe now, which is, I don't know. I love to see that he has that duality. It's like, I'd like to see that in other artists.
I love that. I always love when artists like song to song, it becomes something completely different. You know, it's like, whoa, wasn't expecting that. So both those artists do a lot of that. They'll include, you know, sometimes it'll be punk. Sometimes, you know, there's world music rhythms and stuff. So I love when you know, it's like a jambalaya of sounds and styles create what it is, you know. You said that you're really inspired by a certain era of music. Is it the 70s or is it the 70s folk, Laurel Canyon?
60s.
Oh, 60s. Yeah. Okay.
More 60s. I mean, it's 60s and 70s. I mean, yeah. But like Laurel Canyon is very romantic. And, you know, Carole King is one of the best songwriters ever. So, you know, that she's a big influence too.
Have you seen her musical?
Yeah. Yes.
So good. So good.
I saw it right after I moved back here, and I went by myself, went down to the Pantages, and I went by myself and had a really good, you can get really good seats, by the way, when you come by yourself to theater.
The rush seats, and, yeah.
Like, especially the day of, they'll be like, yeah, there's just like a single, and it's a really good seat. And I was, so I was in, you know, two groups were around me. And when she, you know, she moves to California and the musical and, she, you know, the whole, like,
that's me.
Yeah. I was like sobbing. It was like, they're singing You've Got a Friend. I was just like sobbing. And just the people around me were like, are you okay?
You're like, I love music. Shut up. You're ruining this.
It's me, but Atlanta, not New York.
So let me ask you this. When you're writing, your process, are you starting with melody first? Are you writing mm-hmm. words down? Are you kind of fiddling on guitar, piano? What's your process? Is it chain song to song?
So typically, and I say typically because, like, I don't know, like sometimes it's different. Sometimes I find there's a couple times I've had a melody and I've never been able to find words. There's a couple melodies I'll play around with still, and I'm like, I've never found words to this. I've never written a song with this. I just have this cool melody. I don't know what to do with. So I prefer to do words first, and I prefer to just have, I'm so much journaling. And I used to do, it's funny when you were talking earlier about how, you know, raw you were when you were first starting to write. And now, you know, you kind of get to the point where, like, I'm trying to, you know, I need to be efficient in my songwriting and do it perfectly. And I can't rhyme a word with another, the same word, you know, like that kind of stuff. And you lose some of that rawness. And that's why I like to revisit, because it kind of reminds me, I'm like, you need to just get down into that, like, depressed, like, it's like that teenage angst that you need to kind of harness, and you get cynical as you get older, and you're like, oh, it's not worth being upset about.
Well, it's like you think too much. Like I think it there's something in the early songs that I wrote, I was just writing all the time. Like, it was like voracious. I was just like, just get it all out as much as possible.
So much emotions when you're like younger. You just have so many emotions, and it's like such, it's like the youth, the whole adage, like, youth is wisdom and young. It's like the emotions too, because, like, I just, sometimes I'm just like, I just don't have the energy. It's like, get off my lawn. Like, I'm not going to write a song about that. But, like, you know, it's,
right.
I want to have, like, that, you know, that kind of create, like, those moments where I just feel raw. And so, like, that's, I think, why, like, trauma and, like, just these big things that happen and these big moments, like, I mean, sometimes I just feel like you have to just kind of throw yourself, I'm like, I'm just going to throw myself down that, you know, I'm going to get sad. I'm going to listen to Carole King and get sad. And, like, right. You know, and that's one of the reasons why I get so inspired when I go out and see other musicians, because I just get, like, they'll move me to that emotion. And I'm like, I need to move myself. But I find just, like, as much as you can get on paper, it's the Hemingway method. One of my favorite writers, being a misogynist, it's fine, but he's a very interesting man. He's a very good writer. He would just pour out everything on his page and edit. And so I remember reading that and being like, that's how I have to write songs. Like, Hemingway wrote The Sun Also Rises. Like, so you have, like, two words, and it's like the most emotion that you could ever fit into two words. But you don't do it by just magically coming up with the two words. You do it by magically coming up with, like, the thousands of words that surrounded it, and then it retains those emotions. So, like, I like to
love that. That's give me chills. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's. I mean, like I said, he's a misogynistic person, and he was, but he's a really good writer, and, like, somebody that's been really influential for my writing style. So, and I love his work. He's a very interesting man.
Sometimes the artist and the person sometimes are two different
people. So yeah, exactly.
That comes
exactly.
That comes with the territory. But you know what? As long as you draw from positive things that any artist is doing. And I love that you're drawing from so many eclectic artists. I mean, you mentioned The Clash. You mentioned Hemingway. You mentioned, what's her name? Emmylou Harris. You mentioned, you know, there's so many artists that you love. What are some current artists that you're listening to now that you're like, wow, they've captured that thing?
I shouldn't know you were going to ask me this. I'm like, I know I always blank when I'm, like, thinking about, like, current artists. And, like, there's so many. Oh, you know who I really liked their album last year? King Princess.
Oh, okay.
Really, really good. Just, like, talking about, like, emotionally moving music. Just really well done. Really just, I don't know. Piano player, just a lot. I really liked King Princess.
I love that. I don't know King Princess at all. I'm
Look up King Princess. Really, really, really good stuff.
You know what? That the funny thing about what where music is right now, it's like there's so much music, and it spans so many different styles. And you know, it's funny because a lot of artists are like, well, you know, it's so hard to kind of get attention on a record or a song when there's so right. the market's so saturated. But you know, you just mentioned an artist I've never even heard anything about, and that's why I love chasing music, because there's so much out there, and we're in a time where it's not like we're having to listen to what maybe one record label or one radio station is playing. We have so many options to discover music. So it's kind of an invigorating thing to like listen to so many different artists that are under the radar, you know?
I will say another one of my artists that they've been on the scene for a while, but like they're one of my, they were actually the last band I saw before we all entered into this, the last live music, Dr. Dog.
Dr. Dog? I don't know them either.
Oh, so good. Very, like they have this really, they're kind of just like chill, kind of jam bandy, but like not annoying jam bandy. Like almost like Beach Boys-esque harmonies in their music. Oh. So obviously I'm drawn to that. And they're from outside of Philadelphia in Jersey, I think too. So my dad was from there. So I feel like, you know, there's just so much about Dr. Dog. That's great. But I've seen them several times. And they were somewhere downtown. It was like the new venue. It was like the Microsoft Theater or something.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I saw them in, I guess it was February or March. And it was like the last, we almost didn't go. We were like, you know, I'm like, I don't know why we almost didn't go. It was like a weekday. I'm tired and like, no, go.
You know what? It's like now, just you like know, so you made the right decision. Yeah, because it's like, it's such a weird thing to not know when we'll see live music again. I hate that feeling because I'm like you. It's like I have to go see live music to stay inspired. And it's just really weird to not even hear live music, you know, as a thing. It's like Everybody's just in their own cave. And it's just like everybody's kind of trying to make do with what's in their own cave. But there's nothing like a gathering of music together with people singing lyrics or listening to it live. There's something that's so powerful about that. Where were you playing? Where were you playing live in LA or wherever?
I was playing. I played a couple gigs at Pig and Whistle. And
I love that venue. I played there.
Yeah. And then I was playing I started playing at wineries.
Oh, that's cool.
I really love it because it's such a good vibe, and like it's something where I felt like people were, and it's actually something that might just be, you know, stable for COVID times because you're outside and like,
right.
but it was just people are so chill. I mean, obviously they're drinking wine, so that's going to make them really chill, but it's just really fun to bring friends and it has, like, I always feel like a lot of the winery, like I was a winery up in Ojai, was one of the last ones I played at. And that, of course, that's my vibe too, because that's very like, you know, just the country kind of America, kind of area, you know.
That's Americana city
right there. Yeah, like, you know, so it's like, that just kind of felt right. And like, it was just more exposure to people who aren't like always going out and finding music. And I had so many people coming up and just, oh my God, I love your music. Where can I find more? More so than, you know, any of the other venues I've played in LA, which was interesting. I sometimes skew to an older audience, and that's, you know, like the wineries are good for that. So,
well, it's also cool, like, that you're thinking about playing at a venue that's not really a conventional place, because right. that's how you're going to gather more attention when you play like unconventional areas. You know, it's like the festivals are one way, colleges are another way, but it's like you have to start thinking about the, you know, outside of what the normal radar is, because that's going to generate more sales. It's going to generate more attention and excitement about your music. So I love that you're thinking like that, because not a lot of artists are. And wine and music just go, they just go like this, you know?
I mean, I love wine. So, I mean, it wasn't like, it was one of those things I was out at, was with, I was actually at the winery with one of my girlfriends who was like my, her name's Heather, and she'll call, you know, I'm her manager, you know, and she's kind of like the unofficial manager, but she will go to bat for me. And she basically tells everybody that whenever we're on a trip together, she tells everybody, this is my friend. She's a very talented singer songwriter. If you'd like to book her, like, please, you know, I mean, she would have cards.
You're like, that's me.
Right. I know. She's so funny. But she basically went up. She's like, I need to talk to the booking agent for this winery. Cause I, you know, I'm just like, oh my, cause like we went to this winery, this guy's playing music. She's like, you can do that. I'm like, yeah, that would be fun. And she's like, I'll be right back. And she, and I was like, this was a really good idea. So I kind of can't take all the credit for it. It's Heather.
Well, I love it. Well, you know what? You need people like that in your life.
Totally.
What are you going to play for us next? Let's play something else.
Yeah. So this is a song called Other Than You. Now, this is a bit of a different sound. So I had back in the studio and just wanted to kind of evolve the sound a little bit and just play around a little bit. I think I'm still going to go back to more of the country roots for my next adventure, but it was really fun kind of, I don't know, playing around and just seeing what happened. And it was really well received, the track. So I think it turned out really well. And what we did with this song, which was really cool, it's really important for me to find a way to give back. And my friend Dustin Jacobs, he's been on the show. He kept approaching. He's like, let's do a music video. Let's do a music video. And I'm just like, I want to do a music video, but I want it to mean something. I want it to be, I don't know. Like, I have a problem. Like, I don't want to be filmed to be singing to the camera and like all that. So I wanted it to be something that meant something to me. And so we had a couple meetings, and we had one of the meetings, I was looking over at my dog. I have a rescue dog. And I'm just like, dogs, you have to do something with dogs. And so we wrote this concept for the video. The video's online. It's on YouTube. It's great. We worked with this rescue called Wags and Walks here in LA and filmed with them. We also filmed with a rescue dog that a couple of my friends who've become my dear friends because of this, their dog Sam was in the video. And so we wrote this narrative about a rescue dog and incorporated Wags and Walks. And then we did like a fundraiser for them. So we did.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we did like a fundraising, like a music video launch. So it was a little bit, it made it more about me, and it was just a way to kind of, I don't know.
Get back. I mean, this is my Otis.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of dogs. So I love that you did that. That's amazing.
Well, you probably picked up some of like her. She kind of has been trotting around my house during this. Kind of not sure what to think about all the sounds. At me right now. Do you want to come be on the? No, okay. But yeah, I'm huge dog fan, and I think it's really important to raise awareness for rescue dogs. And there's something COVID did really well, because there's something like all the foster dogs in LA were you know, all the rescue dogs were fostered. They're, you know, they're much more dogs are finding homes because people are at home all the time.
Right. So, right.
That's one positive out of this is that all these.
Totally agree. That was kind of like one of those like lights in the dark. It was
yes.
Like, oh, okay, that problem is getting taken care of. That's great. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So, and you know what? Dogs, they're the greatest things on the planet. So absolutely. All right, let's play this song. What are we going to play? What's the name of it?
It's called Other Than You.
Other Than You. Let's play it.
Special.
Yeah, very nice. So good. I was like Lana Del Rey, Dido, Sarah McLachlan, all kind of twisted into one. I loved it. Very beautiful.
Thank you.
Where can people find you if they want to find your music? What are your social media handles and all of that stuff?
Yeah, so joannaduff.rocks is my website, and joannaduffrocks is Instagram, and I'm on
Spell it out because people are dumb.
Oh, yeah, okay. joannaduff.rocks, R-O-C-K-S. It's Duff, like the beer on The Simpsons, or Hillary, depending on your reference.
Love it. And like, you're going to release another single soon, or what's your plan?
Yeah, I'm working on it. I'm working on one. It's called Chase You. So I'm it's another one I'm revisiting, and I think like that's going to be the next move for me. So,
Joanna, you are a very talented singer-songwriter.
Thank you.
You have to come back to the studio when all the world calms down a little bit, and we'll do another interview. You are a pleasure to meet, and your music is sensational. It really is.
Thank you so much.
I don't use those words very often, but seriously, you know a good thing when you see one and you hear one, and you're both. So thank you for being on the show, and
I wish you lots of
success, and hope lots of our listeners are checking out your music as we speak. And thank you for doing what you do. And I hope to meet you someday in person.
Yeah.
We'll do another interview. We'll do a follow-up interview
The
world calms down. Right? Maybe we'll play a show, too. Maybe we'll play a show, right?
That's what we need to do. Do like an In the Rounds or something. Yeah.
You know what? I just did one of those, and I'm going to start putting some together. I actually have
those
an idea.
Those are the most fun.
Those are the best. And I think we need more of those, just because they're like, it's a really cool way to have songwriters also share with each other. We don't have that enough, so count on it. We'll do songwriters in the round, all right?
Okay,
thanks so much, Joanna. Take care and all the best, okay?
All right, thanks so much.